Welcome to the GPS Training Podcast, the monthly podcast keeping you up to date with everything in the world of outdoor GPS navigation.
Welcome to the GPS Training Podcast. It's our 95th episode. It's our April edition. So welcome, Andy, again to this month's GPS Training Podcast.
Hello.
Have you been up to much over the last month, Andy?
Endless burpees. Burpees. HIIT classes, gym classes.
Twice a week.
Sometimes three times a week.
That's impressive. Very, very impressive.
Mountain training. And lots of hikes as well on the weekends. But gym work during the week and then hikes on the weekend.
Are you feeling a lot better for all this exercise, are you?
Yeah, definitely. Legs are loads stronger. Going up the hills, definitely better. And even, you know, the breathing and stamina, definitely improved. I don't really like burpees, but a lot of the stuff we do is with dumbbells and squats and something called we call them wall balls, where you're throwing a bag full of sand up to a board, doing a squat at the same time. So I think just getting the legs stronger definitely a help.
So we're gonna do the spine challenge, 109 miles in 48 hours, are we this year, Andy?
As long as I finish it, it should be easier. It's never going to be easy, but it should be better at the end of the day. Harder training, I think. I never thought about gym work. I've always just went out running, cycling and hiking, but it's definitely doing these HIIT classes. You know, I go twice a week religiously, had the odd three times a week, definitely helping.
Brilliant. Okay, so in this month's GPS training podcast, we're going to talk about what was going on last weekend at the Outdoor Expo at the Birmingham NEC. Then we're going to look at the TwoNav Rock, a new addition to the TwoNav range that we're stocking here at GPS Training. Then we're going to discuss taking your GPS overseas. What should we be doing ahead of our trip? And then finally, we've got Andy's top tips. So the first thing on this month's GPS Training podcast is last weekend's National Outdoor Expo, which is at Birmingham NEC. So first of all, I'm going to say thank you so much for everybody who came along and said hello to myself. I was actually on the Zolio stand working with my colleagues there. So we had our own stand last year, but this year we went along with Zolio and we were working with them. So last year they were on our stand and this year I went on their stand to see how they go. I'm actually amazed, Andy, in 1 year to the next, how Zolio's profile has ranged, has raised.
Yeah, there's a lot more people know about the product now. It was already big in the States and I suppose like Canada, Australia. I think it had quite a good presence, you know. But certainly in Europe now, there's lots of, I've noticed, like scout groups and organisations, people doing Duke of Edinburgh, people like that starting to talk about the Zolio satellite tracker.
Yeah, the guys have been working really hard there. You know, there's been quite a lot of people on YouTube reviewing it. They've been working with influencers. They've been plodding away for, I suppose it's been live a year and a half in this country, 2 years. And the last year, I cannot believe, from 1 year to the next, if I tell you that we sold four times as much as we did last year, that could put the whole thing in context. And actually, the people came along, they knew what it was. They knew it was a similar product than what they've seen from Garmin, etc. And I was massively impressed. Key thing with the Zolio, if people don't know, is the affordability of the live tracking, isn't it? Just for extra £4.50 a month, you can add that onto any of the contracts, can't you?
Yeah, and the Zolio, I think we've always looked at it as a simple to use product for someone who already owns a GPS product for navigation, whether it be a Garmin, a TwoNav, it could be you're using a watch, a Garmin watch, a Coros watch. You've got something for your navigation with maps and routes, and you're just wanting something additional for the safety in the hills in case something goes wrong and you need the SOS button using satellites to summons help, or just send friends and family a text message from, it's an app on the phone, but of course you don't need mobile signal, it's just paired with a device, so simple to use. And as John mentioned, we do have the tracking function. It's been there quite some time now, but you just add on an extra £4.50 onto the monthly amount when it's required for people to be able to track you using satellites, not mobile data.
Brilliant. So a big thanks to everybody who came along. I say there was at one point there was a few people queuing to see me and want to have a quick chat with me because we had the stand running with GPS Training as well. So met lots of faces, lots of people listening to the podcast. I actually met someone, Andy, I think it was called Kevin, who'd been all the way back to the start, had listened to every single GPS Training podcast from number one to number 95.
Yeah. Five more, wait till we have the champagne.
I can't think of anything worse than listening to every podcast. 95, something. Mm-hmm. He must have listened to 100 hours of us talking about whatever we talk about.
Anything.
So that's a lot of dedication. So I was quite impressed. He was saying it was fascinating listening back over the podcast, how it's changed, how we've evolved and this kind of thing. So well done to you. And I say it was really good to catch up with you, the customer, at that event. So again, thank you for everybody who I saw at the outdoor show, and I didn't get much chance to look around. I was just on the stand, so I don't really know what else was going on. If anybody knows what was going on, if there's anything released, leave a comment in the comment box below. There's a couple of little video clips people did of me with the Zolio for various channels, so fingers crossed they'll appear over the next 2 or 3 weeks. So thanks for everybody who came along, and I think they're booked again next year, so we'll be back again next year at the Outdoor Expo at the Birmingham NEC. Next thing on this month's GPS Turning Podcast is the 2NAV Rock. Exciting addition to the already growing range of 2NAV GPS units. Andy, have you done a U-turn here? I think you must have, think from the Rock. I'm going to tell the listener what happened. We got the Rock initially, and Andy went, I can't really see where this fits into it. We'll just do the 3, which were the Cross Plus, Terra, and Aventura 2 Plus. And then 2 months down the line, Andy, U-turn.
I've even got one. I think we've always said there's always positive and negatives to products, you know. Sometimes we maybe get, you always hear the positive side from us. We do, you know, with everything we sell, there's always something you think, that could be better, I wish that was different. So when John's talking about this 2NAV Rock ROC, it was the smallest out of the 4 current 2NAV handheld GPS devices. And when we first got the samples in before Christmas, mm-hmm. 2023, I took the Rock home, and actually I took the biggest one. I had the Adventurer 2 Plus, so I had the biggest and the smallest, and I just thought, too small. Didn't really use it properly. I didn't have Ordnance Survey maps on it, and I just thought, for our customer, the next one up is the Cross Plus. There's price-wise, not a lot of difference. The Cross Plus actually comes in slightly cheaper. I'll come back to that. So I thought, well, actually, is someone going to want a smaller unit? And there's a couple of things I'm not going to be, you know, when I say negative, a couple of things I'm not, you know, it's what it is. I'll go through that. But actually, the more and more I started using it, mainly because we had 2 or 3 customers say, well, you want that one. I know you don't stock it, but you stock the rest of the range. Would you order them in for us? Of course, we've ordered some in. And then I played about a bit more with the demo one and have come up with a load more positives of why I really like it. So we should talk about why we really like it. I think that's the first thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. You've said a number of times that we kind of initially didn't like it. It was small. I suppose it is a podcast. People can't see the product. I think you did a really good video this week, which is comparing to the Utrex 32X.
And I've just added it to the product pages, the one where I compare it to the next one up, the Cross Plus.
Yeah.
So that video is actually on the product page itself. And I think the other videos you've got added, it's on the news, on our news feed on the website, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly
where you've
right,
searched. Is it news and reviews, and then you've got 2NAV?
Yeah, it's product reviews, and then 2NAV A Breath of Fresh Air is the article. And then there's some links at the top of that article, and there's one comparison videos, and that's where you'll find the ones that we're talking about. So where this one now, Andy's compared it to the Utrex 32X, and then you've also compared it to the Rock versus the Cross Plus as well. But this is what I was going to say, when we compare it to 32X, because people can't see the product, it's actually got a larger screen on it, even though we're saying it's a smaller unit than what we're finding on the Utrex 32, aren't we, and the 22.
I mean, I think I'll start with my only 2 negatives, and then it gets them out the way. Well, it was on, you know, there's things you think, and one of them's why I thought, oh, this isn't for me. But actually, when I've realised I don't need this feature very often, the bit I'm going to talk about, it doesn't really matter. And then when I go into the positives, you'll know where I'm coming from. So the first negative for me was, when you're setting up the unit, one of the nice things with 2NAV, you don't really need a computer. So a lot of things are done via the unit being paired with your Wi-Fi. Really simple to do, but you have to type in your Wi-Fi password. So being a slightly smaller screen and a slightly smaller keypad, when I first was setting up, it took me 3 or 4 attempts to get my Wi-Fi password in correctly because I kept on hitting the wrong letter on the small keypad. Now, bear in mind, you only do that once. I found a little stylus. I now use a stylus that a friend's given me. It's a Doddle. So really, did I have to be that concerned? You may mark waypoints in it and want to type in some information about that waypoint you're marking. It's not too bad to do. You're not typing in a long password and a little stylus helps. Again, I very rarely do that. So let's forget about, you know, that's something you very rarely do, and now I'm using a stylus. So that was the first thing. And the only other thing, which actually wasn't when I first got it, but it's got a magnetic charger that clips on the back. I prefer a charger that plugs in, but I know why they've done it. It's because the unit's lovely and compact, and to make it more watertight in the smaller unit, rather than having a USB flap to plug in a cable. Magnetic chargers are used, I know other cycle devices that use it. The only thing I'm always wary with, I've got such a cluttered bedside table, so I need to tidy my house up, really. If it's charging in the night time and I knock it with all my clutter, and I've sometimes knocked the cable off. But as long as you know about that and you just put it so I could tie a band around it, that is it. So actually, as I've started using it, and this is going to be the big positive, and John's mentioned the eTrex 32, so this is a good thing to talk about. A lot of customers want something really lightweight and compact, but still with a decent size clear screen, and that's what the ROC gives you. It is the lightest handheld of every unit we sell. It only comes in at 120 grams. So looking at me, I'm trying to be a bit of a trail runner. I'm not going to say I'm an ultra runner. I can't really, haven't quite got to that stage yet, but doing some of these activities where I'm just out all day and trying to go fast and light, I didn't think I'd be too concerned about weight. But 120 grams, I don't even know I've got it in my hand or in my pocket. So that's the first big thing. It's the lightest we sell. If you compare it to an eTrex 32, which always was the most compact, lightest unit we sold, it's not a massive difference. I'm not going to, you know, it's 141.7 grams.
And that only has a 2.2 inch screen, where the ROC has a 2.7 inch screen, so we've got half an inch screen.
So we always said the most compact unit we sold with a colour screen and maps was an eTrex 32X. Still a great unit, very popular unit for someone who just wants button control. It's got a 2.2 inch screen. The ROC coming in at 120 grams, very similar in sizes, a little bit slimmer. I'll go through the sizes in a second, but it's a 2.7 inch diameter screen, so it's got a bigger screen. I mean, if I go through the sizes now, it's 5.8 centimeters wide, compared to, if you're used to something like an eTrex 2232, that's 5.4 centimeters wide, so virtually nothing in the width. An eTrex is 10.3 centimeters tall. The ROC is only 9 centimeters tall, so it's not as tall. An eTrex is 3.3 centimeters deep. The ROC is 2 centimeters deep. We do add on 0.4 of a centimeter just for a little connection block on the back of the ROC for attaching it to a bike and various other attachments, but it's still slimmer than the eTrex. So really, it is the most compact, smallest unit we do, but with a 2.7 inch screen diameter, so it's still big. It's bigger than the eTrex that we're comparing it to, you know.
Yeah, it is. I think it's a lot more screen on the GPS unit. I think that's what the reality is. It's no bigger, but you've got a larger screen on it. Buttons as well on both bottom and the side.
So it's got actually some extra buttons, which I show in the video compared to the Cross. So it is a touchscreen unit, and there's certain things you're going to do on the screen, moving the maps around. But I find the maps move really quickly, so that's a very big positive. Some things I find with some of the joystick control units, you're not moving the maps as quick. They're adequate. I'm not going to be negative. You know, they work, but I find the maps are very responsive. So you use the screen to move the maps around. There's some menus you access, like the main menu, start your trip recording, stopping your recording, some of the extra quick screens to do with brightness, checking your satellite signal, you touch on the touch screen. But generally, when you're using it on the ROC, you've got plus and minus buttons for zooming in and out. You've got a button that takes you back out of a menu if you've went into a menu, or takes it really quickly back to the map if you're on a different screen. That's a button. It's got two buttons at the bottom of the unit that we don't get on the other two, Nav, Cross Plus and Terra, which allow you to use physical buttons to move between data screens like a trip computer, a compass screen, an elevation graph, and again with a very quick button to get you back to the map. And it's got a simple tap button on the power button that takes the screen off to save battery but still recording. So me using it, I'm thinking this thing weighs nothing, the screen's nice and sharp, the bright, I've got it at 40% brightness, it's really bright. It's got the same pixel display as the eTrex 32, But comparing it side by side, it's brighter and I think there's more colour. So sometimes we get head up on pixels, which I know helps with the clarity, but I, TuneNav have never given me the colour figure. The only time I've ever seen a colour figure mentioned on a handheld is a Garmin GPS Map 65 says 65K colours. I don't know what the colour figure is on the ROC or any of the TuneNav units, but the colours just seem a little bit better contrast in them. Not, I mean, don't get us wrong, they're not loads of difference, but I just thought this is such a light, compact unit with, again, all the features we expect of the higher end units, like an altimeter, a compass, an IP rating down to IP 67, down to minus 20, you know, the things we expect on an outdoor device. We've got all the features we have on the other TuneNav devices where you can make the route line thicker, different colours, so it's easier to see. And the big thing for me still is, with all devices I use now, I very rarely get my computer out. I can use a very simple app to send a route to the device and sync routes backwards and forwards. That's what I like. I hardly ever use my computer now with it. So I think just really, I thought it was too small, but now I thought actually, because the screen's so bright and you can make data boxes bigger, you can make your own data box fields. I've got one data box, that's the full size of the screen that just displays me grid reference. I've got another screen because I'm training, as you know, we keep talking about maintaining that, but I'm keeping an eye on my average speed and my current speed. I've got two data boxes, so just one with average speed and one with current speed, and it's dead quick to move to them. So having a slightly smaller screen doesn't matter. Now, I know with all the products we sell, actually all the Garmins and TuneNavs and even the watches we sell, you can fiddle about with data screens to make them not the default and have them bigger. So that's not unique to the TuneNav, but it's still nice that we can do it. So I've just loved the fact I don't even know I'm carrying the unit. And final thing on battery, it is a built-in battery, so I'm not worrying about AA batteries. Now, that concerns some people who like to carry AA batteries, so I can understand that's why you might go for an eTrex unit. That's a positive on the eTrex. But I'm finding the battery life, they quote 18 hours with the screen on at 50%. On the last trip I've done with it, where I was out for about 5.5-6 hours, and I looked at what battery I'd used, I think it was about just under 25%. I'm going to get 20 hours, maybe a bit more. So for that lighter weight, long distance run that I'm doing over a full day and maybe into the night, it's going to be adequate. And a lot of events, like you're going to do something where you're maybe out for 20 hours, then you're going to come into a checkpoint for an hour or two. It takes only an hour and a half to 2 hours to fully charge it. I just quickly put it on charge.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing that we're finding with TuneNav is actually the batteries are outperforming what they should be doing on paper, isn't it? And I know I took the TuneNav Cross Plus, I did a 20-hour walk, and actually still had 25% battery life at the end of it, where on paper it said it had 20 hours. Because I think they're measuring it with the screen being on all the time, aren't they?
I mean, the other thing, now every manufacturer does this, they all quote battery life using GPS only, meaning you're only picking up the American system. Garmin are the same, other manufacturers are the same, TuneNav are the same. But when I've been testing the unit, now the TuneNav device actually picks up, you can set it at GPS, Galileo, GLONASS and Beidou. It can only be a set of three at any time, maximum. You can have it a set of two or just one. I've been testing the unit with GPS, Galileo and Beidou, so three. That will use more battery, but potentially quicker satellite signal, more accurate in a more challenging environment. So that figure I'm quoting where, with me taking the screen off when it wasn't needed and with the 50% backlight, and I was getting, I think I would have been close to 20 hours, if not more. That wasn't even testing with GPS only, that was GPS, Galileo and Beidou, and I had a temperature device with my Garmin watch, and the temperature was recorded at about 6 degrees when I was out testing the other week. So it wasn't warm. I know it wasn't freezing, but at the same time it wasn't warm, so I think that was a real good test for the unit.
Brilliant. Key thing also is the price. TuneNav ROC, again, without the ordnance survey mapping, coming at £28,999. And even with full GB 1-25K mapping, £439.99. And if you compare that, no, again, I don't want to keep comparing to Garmin, but Garmin 125K map card, 350. We've got unit here for, what, an extra 90 quid? As a unit and full GB 125K mapping. So amazing value for money as well, isn't it?
Top tip, I think, with any of these units where the screens are brilliant when you're using them for navigation, but that initial setting up where you've got to type some information in, little stylus. The stylus that my friend gave me, he bought four on Amazon for about £12. So he's given me a stylus that probably cost him, you know, £3. And I use that to type in my Wi-Fi code. That's the only time I'm going to do that unless I change my router. Other than that, it's changed me into actually, I do like having that option of a lighter unit. Now, don't get us wrong, I like a bigger screen unit as well. But I think you could look at it as someone who's into the trail running, where they're not needing to go more than the 20 hours. And they maybe don't, they haven't got a watch with a colour screen. You know, they may be using a watch to record the activity, but they want something with mapping. Or, you know, maybe using, I know a lot of trail runners still who will record just times using a Timex. I'm trying to think of the one that I used to use there. The one they always pushed for, like, the endurance running. But there's no GPS or navigation or maps. You've got that type of watch. You don't want a GPS watch on the... You want something just with a decent screen, but very lightweight. So even though very much, Tune, I've obviously pushed this as a cyclist unit as well, because it's very good for the cycling. You get a free cycle mount with it. I see it as being a good market for that person going light and doing trail running. That sort of stuff, you know.
Very good. So if you want to look at the videos that Andy's been talking about, we go to our website, which is gpstraining.co.uk. Click on product reviews on that top menu bar. Then the second story down, you'll see TuneNav, a breath of fresh air. So if you click on that, there's a lot of videos on that webpage. But at the top, there's some quick links. And number 6 in the quick link says comparison videos between models. And you'll see the videos that we're just talking about, which is the top two, and now the TuneNav Rock, which is compare it to the eTrex 32X, and also comparing it to the Cross Plus, which is the next size up TuneNav GPS unit. So again, we've been big fans of the TuneNav GPS units, so I think they're performing very well. I've lost count. We have sold, you know, hundreds is no exaggeration, hundreds and hundreds of them. And so far, credit to Andy's online resource. I think we've had very few tech calls. I think people are working through those videos, Andy, and getting the most out of it, aren't they?
Yeah, thank you everyone for your patience as we do the videos. We didn't want to rush into them because we're learning things all the time, and we want to know the insides out of everything we do before we put a video on. So I haven't finished the videos yet. So anyone who's been looking, thinking, is that it? Now, bear in mind, I think I counted, I've done four. So basically, the Rock, the Cross Plus, and Terra are the same set of videos, because virtually there, apart from a few slight differences, which I talk about in the first few videos, everything's the same on the menus. I think I've done 40, I was up to about 44 videos. And then if you've got the Adventurer 2 Plus, just having the joystick control and a few extra features to do with sounds and tones, I've done the same videos again 44 times. But there's still a couple of modules to go. I've got a bit more to do on managing what's on your unit when you're finished and taking stuff out of the unit to review. And I'm going to add some extra videos probably on the... A few more on the app, the link app for sending stuff. I have got an initial quick one for sending a route from the app. And we'll do some videos on using the See Me sort of tracking function as well. So they're nearly there. We're having, you know, another few weeks. Hopefully we'll have those all on and complete.
Fantastic. So if you want to know more about the TuneNav, again, don't get to our website, gpstraining.co.uk. Click on GPS store at the top and then handle the GPS units. The next thing on this month's GPS training podcast is taking your GPS overseas. What you should be doing ahead of your trip. So again, on our website, there's 3 new videos that we've just released in the last 2 or 3 weeks, taking you through what we're going to be discussing. So really, there's 3 key things, Andy, we need to think about before heading overseas this summer with your GPS.
So the videos we've done are all on Garmin units, but actually it relates to other devices as well, including TuneNav. So we'll just run through the first thing. On your GPS device, you have settings to do with position format. That is the grid system that your device will display if you go to your satellite page, or you may have changed one of your data boxes to display a grid reference. So in Great Britain, you'll be used to British National Grid Ordnance Survey grid references. So if you've got a paper map, you can see your numbers as you go along, your eastings and northings, and you have a map sheet number in the top left of your map. So normally when we send out a GPS device, it's set up as British National Grid. Now, if you're going abroad and you never change the position format setting in your unit, I didn't say this in the videos, but I don't think I did. It won't stop your unit working. You'll still get a satellite signal. You'll still be able to see yourself moving across a map. But in emergency, if you needed to cross-refer with a paper map, a guidebook, or tell someone where you are, the screen that says the satellite screen will not show a grid reference unless you change it to the grid system that is potentially used in the country you're visiting. First thing I'd say, do your research on the country you're going to. Some of them are more obvious. You might be on your Garmin or your TuNav GPS device, and you go into your setup and position format settings, and you scroll down and go, oh, Austrian grid, I'm going to Austria. Garmin's got a Dutch grid, German grid, just a few off the top of my head. Those countries are there. Change it to that grid system. But some countries don't have their own grid system like those countries, and like Great Britain, where we use British National Grid. So if you went to somewhere like France or Spain, I've seen French IGN maps that say they're GPS friendly, and they tell you on the map somewhere they're using a format called UTM in the Garmin, and actually on the TuNav right at the top of the position format, you can change to UTM. But don't assume, if you buy a guidebook for France and the guidebook says it's using a HDD, MM, long and lat setting or something different, check to see if you've got that in your unit. Because I have been caught out before where Spain's another good example where they often use UTM, but I had a customer said my guidebook didn't match the UTM grid system, but the guidebook said it was using a long and lat, which is one of the settings. So change your position format in the unit if you do want to display a grid reference on the satellite screen.
And if you want a little bit of guidance on our website, under that article I'm talking about, again, go to news, and there says taking your Garmin GPS overseas or abroad, rather, video tutorials. Underneath the top video, there's actually a PDF or a link to a PDF, which is some commonly used grid systems PDF download. But Andy says, no, look at your local map, look at your guidebook, but there's some guidance there if you are completely stuck. So you can download that PDF.
Yeah, you know, research the internet. I get a lot of emails, customers asking me, and they'll give me countries I've never been to, and unfortunately I don't always know the answer, and all I'm going to do is go on Google and say, what grid system does this country use? A lot of time if you're going on guided trips or you've got contacts for your accommodation, however you've booked the holiday, sometimes local tourist information, places like that where you may be buying a guidebook or map from, just ask them the question, email them and say, do you know what grid system you're using? So just do some research before you go, and it's worth changing your unit because in emergency you might want to get that grid system out of the satellite page of your device.
Brilliant. First thing is change your position format setting. Next thing is various mapping options. So if you've got a colour screen GPS unit, you're going to get maps more than likely on the page. So Andy, there's a couple of options available for maps, aren't there?
Yeah. So on the Garmin units, a lot of the current units, I'll just run through a few quickly, eTrex 22, 32X, Montana 700 series, GPS Map 65 series. If you had the older 66s, it was the 66i and 66SR, and the current 67 full range, they all come preloaded with Garmin's TopoActive Europe maps covering all of Europe. You can update those maps for free on everything other than the 67s. You need a computer, a program called Garmin Express. You can search for updates. Some of your units will not have enough memory for all of Europe, but you will be prompted to say, use something called Map Manager, and you can say, don't install all of Europe, and you can pick regions, just so you get the latest update, which is 2023.10. Some units, if you're not using an Ordnance Survey map card in the back, or you're going to take that out when you go to Europe, you could put in a micro SD card up to 32 gig and download all of Europe with the preloaded.
Very good. That's your first option. First option, if you've got GPS, you have the preloaded maps, yes.
Yeah. 67s, you can actually update them via Wi-Fi, which we have on videos on the online training course. Other options are, if you're on the GPS training website, gptraining.co.uk, in our GPS shop, we've got a maps heading. Click on the maps heading. You can search for countries at the top, or you'll see maps listed. If you see a map listed with a Garmin logo and it's a genuine Garmin Topo Pro map, I know we've got ones for France at the top of my head, look at the information. When you click on those maps and look at just the initial information box, it's just copied directly from Garmin's website. It'll tell you where that map data comes from. So some of those maps are going to be, I'm not going to say necessarily equivalent to Ordnance Survey, but they're going to be more detailed map options, but there is a cost involved in that. They're not, I'm not going to say not the cheapest maps. You've got to pay for the, you know, it's the same in this country. Garmin have to pay Ordnance Survey license fees. If it's French maps or German maps that have come from, say, Compass mapping, Garmin have got to pay license fees to Compass, etc. That's why there's a higher cost for those maps. But look at the information. It's all on there, and tells you the coverage as well, what areas they cover. And we can order those maps in as a micro SD card that would go in the back of your unit.
Great. And then the final option for maps is...
So, I suppose if you're looking out of Europe and you can't see it either, Garmin don't do those maps, or we haven't got, it's not a Topo Active one. You can buy open source maps. We have some open source maps that we can do for you. The charge is not for the mapping, it's just for our time to download and the cost of the micro SD card that we put them on, because not everyone has the use of a computer to be able to do it themselves or the know-how. So we're just covering our costs for the micro SD card and putting the maps on. And when you don't go in our OpenStreet Maps for Garmin drop-down box, countries are listed, and when you click on each country, there is some overviews of the style of what the map looks like. If you've already got the Topo Active Europe maps, in some cases they're just as good, if not better, but it might be you just want a different style. Some people like to have two different options on the unit, but of course if you're going out of Europe, we have some other countries listed there. If you can't see a country listed you're looking for, please look at our contacts us at the top right of our website. We've got contact us. Send us an email. We can't promise we can find it, but we do sometimes have other maps we can get hold of for countries that aren't listed.
Brilliant. So those are your three options, which are the preloaded Topo Active mapping, the native maps really for that country, which is the official Garmin maps, or the official maps for that country that Garmin provide, or alternatively, OpenStreetMapping. And those are the three map options. And then finally, GPS settings, time settings, and compass calibration. So these are just some other routine things we should be really doing anyway. So when we get to a new country, some other things we should be considering.
So a number of customers have called me before, messaged me and said, I'm abroad, I've just turned my unit on. The time at the top of my unit is incorrect. Why hasn't it changed? Now, the first thing could be they haven't got a satellite signal with their unit. The clock won't change until you go outside with a clear view of the sky and a satellite signal. Now, normally as default on a Garmin unit, when you go into your setup menu, you'll see one that says time. We normally have that set as automatic. I had a customer recently who thought he had to change that. And then, you know, because there is options where you can manually say, I want it set to, it was somewhere in the US. So of course, when you'd come home, it wasn't automatically changing. We normally just leave it on automatic. And then what happens is when you get a satellite signal, that automatically changes. So just putting the time zone on automatic. I'm just going to go to a 2Nav unit for a second. I know the videos aren't on, we haven't done any videos on 2Nav yet. I'm sure we can add those in, to cover that. On the 2Nav unit, at the moment, there's not an automatic time zone setting. So when you go in to set up your 2Nav, when we send them out, we send them out as the time zone for UK, but you have to manually go in and change that. It won't stop the unit working, but if you want to see the correct time, if you've got one of your data boxes set as time of day on the 2Nav, you do have to pick the time zone manually. I know they are looking at making that hopefully automatic in the future. So that's the first one, the time setting. And the second one we would say with any unit, whether it be watch, Garmin, 2Nav GPS, calibrate your electronic compass if your device has one. So the only devices we really sell at the moment that don't have an electronic compass would be the eTrex 22. That's it. All the others have an electronic GPS map 65, sorry, the one without the S doesn't have an electronic compass. If you've got a device with an electronic compass, that means when you're stationary with your device and not moving, the electronic compass helps the map line up. So we always say when you've traveled more than 100 miles since you calibrated your electronic compass, recalibrate your electronic compass.
Brilliant. So that's the three things you need to do before you're going overseas, which is look at the position format, mapping options, which Andy's discussed there, the various options that are available to you, and then the GPS settings, which are time settings and compass calibration. If you'd like to look at the article we're talking about, which has these videos, please go to our website, which is gpstraining.co.uk. Click on news on the tap menu bar, and you'll see the top article says, taking your Garmin GPS abroad, video tutorials. There's video tutorials taking you through what we've just been discussing, and those also there's that link to the commonly used system grid system PDF download as well, plus various other links to resources that you'll find helpful. So again, have a look there. Again, it's coming to that season where people are thinking about getting maps. If you are wanting us to get maps for you, please give us a little bit of time. We are getting maps relatively quickly, but don't ring and think you're going to be in 2 or 3 days. It's going to be more like a week or 2 weeks. So give yourself a little bit of time. If you are planning a trip overseas, give yourself a bit of time and get in touch with ourselves. Next thing on this month's GPS training podcast is Andy's top tips. I see we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 top tips.
It's a theme of a theme. Lock. Because okay. A little slight error I had on my training run on Sunday just gone. So my tips, even though there's four, they're fairly quick to run through because it's all the same theme about locking your various devices so you don't accidentally touch buttons you didn't mean to touch. Just to give you an example that we are only human and make mistakes ourselves. Last weekend I took a couple of GPS devices out. Actually, I probably had three GPS devices, a couple of watches, testing as I do for work and doing a training run. And I told my wife, don't worry, you'll be able to track us on whichever method you want because I have various devices. I've got Garmin InReach. I've got a Garmin watch that uses the Garmin Connect tracking, different ways of tracking. My wife basically said none of them worked. And why did none of them work? Because in the three devices I had, the only one that I didn't have tracking on, the one I was using for navigation, was the 2Nav Rock. That one was fine because it was in my hand and the navigation worked absolutely fine. But what I managed to do is on my GPS Map 67i, I put it in my pocket rather than using the backpack tether, and accidentally the buttons got pressed to stop the recording. So that wasn't recording. And on my Garmin Epix 2 Pro watch, which is quite a chunky watch, probably going over a style or something, I did not realise that I'd accidentally hit the stop button, so there was no tracking there. Very silly of me, because I do tell friends and other, you know, work colleagues, etc., who are using these devices and customers, how you lock them. So we're going to start with really the Phoenix and Epix watches first, which are the big, you know, the bigger Garmin watches. There's more chance of you, when it's moving around on your wrist, maybe going over a stile, you bend your wrist tightly and you accidentally hit the start stop button at the top left. So on a Garmin Phoenix and Epix watch, as default, I'm sure my Epix 2 Pro had this icon as default but in the controls menu, but just to check, on your watch, you've started an activity, you're recording an activity, and then you think, right, I don't want it to accidentally stop. When you hold the top left-hand button in for a few seconds, takes you to the controls menu, and then when you use your up and down buttons off, you've got touchscreen, scroll round, look for a padlock symbol. When you've got the padlock symbol selected in the top right with a little white line to the right of it, you simply press your start stop button. That locks the screen. To unlock it, you just hold in any button for a few seconds, so there's less chance, because you've got to hold a button in for a few seconds rather than a single tap, there's less chance of you accidentally stopping your recording. If for any reason you don't see the padlock symbol when you hold that top left button in, what you can do after holding the top left button in, if you went through all the icons and you definitely can't see a padlock symbol, all you need to do while you've got the controls menu still on the screen, hold your middle left hand button in for a couple of seconds. You've got the option add controls, select add controls with your start stop button, and just scroll up and down the list until you see the lock option and select it, and then you'll have it on your controls menu.
Brilliant. That's the Garmin Phoenix Epix locking the screen. And then Chorus, which are
huge. Now the Chorus, to be honest, is default, is already set. So what happens with the Chorus watch is default, I'll tell you how you check this as well. What happens with my Chorus watch, either when I'm not using the watch and just wearing it as a everyday watch, or I start an activity. Once I've started an activity, after so many seconds, it's a short time, it locks itself. And to unlock it, you basically hold in the middle scroll wheel button, keep it held in for a few seconds, and you get this green bar going down round the screen to show it's unlocked. But if you want to double check that, when you go into your settings on your Chorus watch and you go into more settings, you'll see one called auto lock. So I normally have auto lock on, and then within that setting you've got the option for standby, which means when you're using it as a watch, or activity, and I've got both of those setters. Hold to unlock. There is an option where you can say it's not on and it doesn't lock, and there's also an option where you say use the scroll wheel, but I found the scroll wheel, you've got to keep turning the wheel round to unlock, so I find it easier just hold the option where it says hold to unlock, and you're just holding in the middle scroll wheel button until the green bar goes right the way around the screen and it's unlocked. So it's normally there as default on the Chorus, but it's worth checking. So if I'd been using my Chorus watch, I wouldn't have accidentally stopped the recording. So that's the Chorus watch.
Now we move on to units. So Garmin GPS Map 6667 series.
Yeah, so on the GPS Map 67 and 66 series, so what I accidentally did, I put it in my pocket and the buttons got pressed. So what you can do, if you're about to put your GPS Map 66 or 67 away, when you tap your on-off button once, you get the status screen where you can adjust your backlight. It's automatically on the tab called lock keys. It only appears on the screen for a few seconds, so if it disappears, just tap your on-off button again. You're not holding it in to turn it off, just one tap of the power button. You see lock keys on the screen, press your enter button once, and that's it, locked now. If you did have the map screen on all the time, you'd still see yourself moving across a map, but when I put it away in my pocket, nothing's going to get accidentally unlocked because you've got to tap the power button once to unlock it. So that's what I should have done, and then my GPS map 67 wouldn't have stopped recording.
Just funny, because I've started carrying, if I wear my lightweight pack, I put it in my pouch around the waist, and I've learned very quickly, you need to lock it if you're going to put it in there, because it will press its button. So
in hindsight, what would have stopped it? We have backpack tethers at work that we use. We've got one in our demonstration bag. If I'd taken a backpack tether home, which straps around the front strap of your rucksack, and clipped it on that way, it's a waterproof unit. It could have been outside. The buttons wouldn't have got pressed. I wouldn't have had that issue. Hence, really, I've learned two things. Either use backpack tether. If it's going to go in a tightish pocket, just make sure I lock the keys.
Brilliant. And then finally, Montana 700 and two nav GPS.
Yeah, so two of the touchscreen units we sell, Montana 700s or any of the two navs, which are all touchscreen, all of them have got as default a button set to just turn the screen off, and it locks it at the same time. A lot of customers might not realise, on a Montana 700, if you're looking at your map screen and think, right, I'm now going to put it in my carry pouch, we sell a pouch for it. If you tap your power button twice quickly, the screen goes off, but the unit's actually still on. You've got a little LED flashing to show it's still on, and then you just tap the power button again to unlock it. Dead simple. Saves battery as well because your screen's off. On the two nav GPSs, as default, they're set, so one single tap of the power button on any two nav, if you haven't changed the default settings when you get it from us, the screen goes off, it's locked, it's still recording. You actually nicely have a blue LED flashing on the front, so you know your unit's still on, and you simply tap the power button once again to unlock.
Brilliant. So all the tips of how you can lock your buttons and screens on the both the Phoenix Epix watches, Chorus watches, Garmin GPS Map 66 and 67, and then any touchscreen unit, including the Montana 700 and all the two nav. If you want more top tips and you want to get to grips with your GPS unit, don't forget to sign up for the online resource. If you go to our website, which is gpstraining.co.uk, and click on the online resource on that top menu bar. And finally, many thanks for listening to this month's GPS Training Podcast. If there's anything you'd like to cover in future episodes, please don't hesitate to get in touch. And if you are thinking about buying an outdoor GPS unit, please do get in touch and we can advise you accordingly. If you can tell a friend about the GPS Training Podcast and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to, that is very much appreciated. And Andy, I know, what are you up to this weekend then? It's actually, we're recording this on Thursday before the Easter weekend, because I think the podcast will come out over the weekend. I think you had a little bit of a short walk lined up for the weekend,
so,
haven't you?
It's actually it's my birthday as well. You know, it's his birthday. Celebration for me, 21 again. So celebration for my birthday. So for my birthday celebration on Good Friday, I'm taking my Garmin GPS Map 67, my two nav Rock, my Chorus Apex 2 Pro, and my Garmin Epix 2 Pro for a walk.
You're leaving your family at home on your birthday, and you're taking GPS units for a walk instead.
I like to cover all bases. I like to test everything. My friends love me at the start of a walk when I say, wait there, I've just got to start all four of my devices. They'll all be locked, so my wife can pick which one she wants to track me from. But I'm doing a training walk as part of the training for Montane Spine Summer. About 85 miles from, if anyone knows Northumberland, it's going to be from Belford in the north, St Oswald's Way. I'm missing out the first bit, so I'm starting at Belford at 8:30 Friday morning, and we're walking virtually non-stop, hopefully, 85 miles till Heavenfields on St Oswald's Way. I can't get my words out, St Oswald's Way in the south. We've got one main stop off at about 52 miles in Rothby, where we're based, with one of the guys who's coming with me. It's his house, so if he lets me sleep there maybe for an hour or two if we're lucky, and then back out into the night and hopefully finish Saturday tea time sometime.
This will be the second longest walk you've ever done, or the longest walk would it be?
It'll be the second. When I first did the Montane Spine, my first attempt of the Challenger South, I got about 90 mile in. So that's the furthest I've ever done in one go. So this will be the second furthest I've ever done in one go. So yeah, it's
excited.
Yeah, just need to get the distance done. I think it'll with all the extra training and that, and then to get this long one done, I'll have a better feel on how things are going. I definitely feel better, but a lot of my training runs and hikes on the weekend have been 20 miles. I'm not going to exactly, they haven't been mega long. And I felt good on them, and I've done them faster and harder. But I think to actually do a 85-mile-ish non-stop, other than, you know, yeah, we are going to stop for a couple of hours at hopefully friend's house for a bit of sleep. It'll be a real good test and give us a better feeling of how things are going, ready for our challenges in June that we're both doing.
Very good. I know you don't need it, but best of luck, Andy. I know you will fly through it. You've got another couple of people joining you who are good friends, so I think you'll be and they're all Garmin users as well, aren't they, as well?
Yeah, and you know I'm still going to a HIIT class tonight, so I've got a HIIT class tonight the night before.
I can't believe this. You know, when you told me before, I said, Andy, you can't go to an exercise class before you go and do, you should be resting before your big walk. But oh no, he's off doing his exercise class
and shopping for food after, so I haven't even got all my food in yet, so not a busy night, and then hopefully
a nice relaxing day tomorrow, walking 85 miles.
Yeah, 85 miles. So thank you, everyone. Yeah,
brilliant. So thank you, Andy, for joining me. Whatever you're getting up to over the Easter break, please enjoy yourself, look after yourself, enjoy the wonderful weather we're starting to get now, the lighter evenings, the longer days as we roll into spring and summer. So yeah, many thanks as always for listening to this month's GPS Training Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the GPS Training Podcast, the monthly podcast keeping you up to date with everything in the world of outdoor GPS navigation.